This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Local attorney Robert Ballot has made national headlines from the New York Times to The Intercept with his high-profile case against the DuPont Chemical Company. A corporate defense attorney for 8 years, this major environmental case exposed that DuPont operated above the Environmental Protection Agency for decades, intentionally hiding the dangers of the chemical PFOA, or C8, to which people were exposed through waste runoff in West Virginia. DuPont used PFOA in the process to make Teflon until fairly recently. And joining us in the studio to discuss the case and the dangers of C8 are attorney Robert Ballot and Dr. Paul Brooks, manager of the C8 Health Project for Ohio and West Virginia. And Dr. Brooks joins us by phone. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rob, Paul, thank you for joining me this afternoon. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
Rob, tell me about how you got involved in this case in the first place. I mean, this revolves around the story of a man named Wilbert Tennant. And tell me about him.
Right. This all started probably about 15, 16 years ago when Mr. Tennant called me with some trouble he was having with cattle on this property. He raised cattle in Wood County, West Virginia, and by the time he called me, he had lost about 200 head of cattle, and he suspected that it had something to do with some sort of contamination coming into the drinking water that his cows were using as the water flowed past a DuPont-owned landfill near his property. And he had videotaped large amounts of white, sudsy water, dark-colored water in the creek, and he suspected that was causing the problems with his cattle. And he was having difficulty getting the attention of folks there locally, and got my name from a neighbor of his. My mother's family had grown up in the area. And one of her friends knew one of his friends. And so Mr. Tennant gave me a call. We took a look at the videotapes, the documents he had, the photographs. And it was a pretty easy thing to decide that there was something seriously wrong going on. We agreed to take on his case. And that eventually led to us discovering that this chemical that we've been, as you've been mentioning, PFOA, was in this landfill, was in the water that the cattle were drinking. It led to us uncovering a lot of internal information about that chemical, PFOA, when eventually, several years later, led to us discovering it was not only in the creek and in the cattle, but in the drinking water of tens of thousands of people around the DuPont plant outside Parkersburg, West Virginia. And through the litigation that ensued over the next several years, not only did we discover that this was a widespread pollutant in that area around West Virginia, but that this was a unique biopersistent chemical that was actually contaminating the blood of humans worldwide and in animals, wildlife all over the planet. And through some of that litigation, we were able to establish a scientific process for looking at the health effects of this chemical and determining from an independent scientific perspective, what does this do to people who are exposed to it? And Dr. Brooks was instrumental in setting that process up for us as part of a settlement in 2005 for the folks out in West Virginia and Ohio. As part of that that scientific process, it was confirmed that exposure to this chemical in your drinking water at even low levels is linked with six different diseases: kidney cancer, testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, preeclampsia, and high cholesterol. And just within the last several months, because of the increased attention that has been received by the chemical, from the scientific process and a lot of the information that's slowly coming out about it, water supplies across the country are now starting to sample for the chemical and are finding it in the drinking water. And just within the last several weeks, communities in New York State, in Vermont, are being ordered on bottled water. When this chemical is being found at even the lowest levels, parts per trillion in the drinking water. And what we've learned through the process is it's a biopersistent chemical, which means it stays in you. And even the tiniest, smallest amounts in your drinking water can slowly build up over time to levels that can cause harm. So even if you're only exposed to a little bit of it today in your drinking water, if you're exposed to that for enough time over a number of years, it can lead to these health problems.
Now, the scientific part that you're talking about is the C8 health project that arose out of this.
Correct.
And Paul, that's your involvement. Tell me about the role of the C8 health project in all this.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Well, I was a retired physician. I practiced in the area since 1969, and I had never heard of PFOA or C8 till 2004 when I met with the attorneys that were on the case. At that time, I had another partner who has subsequently passed, and we were recruited to take a look at the settlement agreement, which would allow us to spend around $70 million, if you will, to recruit people into a large epidemiological group to have blood samples and health histories, et cetera. And to make a long story short, we enrolled something over 69,000 and proceeded to verify all their intake that they had. Their requirement was that they had been exposed to the water for 1 year prior to December 4 of 2004, and we were able to qualify them through different documents like water bills, et cetera. And they filled out a very lengthy health history, which also had a lot of information about any diseases they'd had and family history, et cetera. And then we drew bloods, serum, if you will, to measure around 51 standard blood tests, which included cancer markers and about all the other types of hormonal levels, et cetera, that you would normally get in a battery of tests, just in a screening situation, as well as 10 or 12 fluorocarbons, and C8 being one of them, and so-called PFOA. And this was done in about a year or slightly less, a few days less, that we were able to process these people, get their results, and had the data collated in an unidentified database, and then that was put in the public venue after we had the data verified that we had most of the all the information correct that went there. We turned it over to a three-panel group of epidemiologists that were also screened or vetted by the attorneys on both sides, and they then used some other studies. They added on, like they were, say a 5-year study to see how long it stayed in the blood and do some other stuff. And then for other studies, and then I believe they issued some links to disease along the way after about 2009 or somewhere in there. And then in 12, they actually finished their work and reported out the 6 links that Rob had mentioned earlier. And then that triggered so-called medical monitoring, which has been probably poorly instituted at this point.
Is it still ongoing, though? Is that still ongoing, though?
Pardon me?
Is that still ongoing, Paul, the medical monitoring?
We think it is, but I run into people who aren't getting what I would call medical monitoring. A lot of issues around that, and we'll do any good probably to discuss them here, but it's been a total failure to what it was intended to be for many, many reasons. Anyway, there won't be any worthwhile data come out of that because it's on single basis and not collated like the data that we got. So now at this point in time, by the end of 2015, I believe we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 scientific peer-reviewed articles that have been published using a lot of the CA Health data, if not all of them, as sort of a basis with a lot of fill-in from other data that has come up since this has been exposed to be with the lynx and be a dangerous situation. We keep seeing, like Rob pointed out, we keep seeing the concentration in water, you know, go. We know causes things, but we keep drop that level keeps dropping as the science becomes more thorough. And one thing about the C8 Health Project that pointed out, and Rob alluded to that, that whatever the level is in your water, and if you're a chronic intake of that water, if you drink it and bathe in it and cook with it and all that stuff, it's 100 times that concentration in your serum, in your blood. So what it means is if you're, say, at... if something is caused at, say, a level of 5 in a human body, that means it only has to be 0.05 in the water to produce that because of the 100 times the amount, the difference. So it's a very, very, very small amount. And like you, he's pointed, like Rob pointed out, it's a cumulative. It has a long half-life of probably somewhere between 4 and 5 years once you begin to, not have any input. But that's almost impossible because there's other environmental situations that it comes from, but water is a main one. But it's almost in today's world with the widespread of this contaminant, you just can't get away from it. And that's why everybody in the world has it in their blood, and even the animals, the polar bears, the seals, the fish, you name it. And it's a worldwide contamination never seen before in
Rob,
the history of the world.
Yeah, I think as Dr. Brooks was mentioning, I think he's being a little modest about the health project that he helped implement. The reason that project was so important, because we're talking about a chemical that was essentially what people would call unregulated at the time. It wasn't on any EPA list of regulated materials. It wasn't on state lists. And so at the time this showed up in everybody's drinking water, we became aware that people were drinking it and they were exposed at X level. There weren't federal or state guidelines telling people, here's what's, quote, safe, here's what's, quote, unsafe.
Really?
No.
Wow.
There was an internal DuPont standard, which was being exceeded in the water. So one of the things that we wanted to make sure we did at the time was set up a process to figure out exactly what are safe levels, what would be the health effects. Most of the studies that had been done at that point had been done by the DuPont or the manufacturer of the chemical 3M. There had not been studies done on exposed community populations with elderly folks, women who were pregnant or young children. So we wanted to set up this study, as Dr. Brooks mentioned, and included almost 69,000 people in that community to look at what were the actual effects that were found in this community. And as Dr. Brooks mentioned, one of the outcomes of that was once these diseases were found to be linked, the people who have the diseases are now entitled to go and pursue their claims against DuPont for whatever disease they have, one of those 6 diseases. And the people who don't yet have the diseases are entitled to what we call medical monitoring to get tested for it going forward. And as Dr. Brooks mentioned, the turnout has been a bit disappointing because this is something where if folks choose to do it, they can come in and sign up for the program. We've got, I think, around 6,000 people that have signed up at this point. We'd obviously, as I would join Dr. Brooks in saying, we would like a lot more participation in that. But the critical piece of this project has been to set up this independent scientific process to look at the data independently, come out with findings of what these health effects are, and then allow people to pursue their claims based on that independent science.
So what kind of regulatory changes have occurred because of the suit?
Well, you know, at the time that we first discovered this in the drinking water, as I mentioned, it wasn't really regulated under state or federal statutes or regulations. So we had to pursue, you know, just these common law, what are called tort claims for nuisance, negligence. This is something that shouldn't be in the water. And we started pushing the U.S. EPA beginning in 2001 and the state, West Virginia and Ohio, to begin looking into this chemical, to start regulating it. And unfortunately, what we came to learn was this was a chemical that had been in use way before the EPA even existed, since the 40s or the 50s. It was sort of grandfathered into this process. And so when we alerted EPA that this chemical was in the drinking water of tens of thousands of people out in West Virginia, Ohio, this ought to be regulated, somebody ought to look at it, the EPA had to play a bit of a catch-up game to find out what was known about the chemical, started looking into it in 2002, and then started what is unfortunately a very slow process to regulate a chemical in drinking water. There are a number of steps that have to be followed, and it's amazing, but as we sit here today, some 15 years later, there is still not a federal guideline or standard for PFOA in drinking water, even though it's being found now all over the country. There are guidelines, and those guidelines, as Dr. Brooks mentioned, keep getting lower and lower as we learn more about this chemical. But the EPA still hasn't set a number. State of Ohio has never set a safety level, nor has West Virginia.
Now, DuPont's not using this chemical anymore in Teflon production, right?
U.S. EPA actually ended up bringing a lawsuit against DuPont in 2004 when it started looking at all this information and realized we, EPA, hadn't been told about this this chemical, and we really should have known about this years, decades earlier. If we had known, we could have started regulating it. They brought a lawsuit against DuPont claiming information had been withheld. That was in 2004. Shortly after that was settled by DuPont for what was, I believe, the largest administrative penalty ever obtained by EPA at the time, DuPont entered into an agreement with the agency to do what they call a voluntary phase out of the chemical. That was announced in early 2006, and it said that by 2015, DuPont and several of the other manufacturers would stop manufacturing or using the chemical in the United States. And I believe that it was in late 2013, DuPont notified EPA it had met that target and it had stopped making it.
So Paul said something interesting, too. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong about this. You said you had never heard about PFOA C8 until 2004. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
Why did all this take so long to unearth?
Well, you know.
Well, I think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead. You were on the head of that. I got in the middle.
A lot of the, you know, at the time, a lot of the information that was known about the chemical was known pretty much within just DuPont and the manufacturer, the 3M company, because this was seen as something that was not regulated, something that they, you know, the company would take the position we don't have to disclose. A lot of that information was kept internal and really was not made public until we found it through the lawsuit and started going through documents and finding documents that told us about this chemical, its toxic effects, and the fact that it was in the drinking water. And it was actually, you know, us notifying the EPA and the public about it that actually finally got the word out. DuPont at one point actually went and tried to get a gag order to prevent us from getting that information out. That was in 2001. Fortunately, that was denied. The court saw this as a public health threat, and information should be distributed. And so it was that process beginning in 2001 through the litigation slowly got information out to the regulators and to the scientific community. And when the C8 Health Project that Dr. Brooks helped implement was in place and all this data was collected, again, data from 70,000 people that was turned over to this independent panel.
Now, that 70,000 people, Rob, is that everybody that you know of that's been affected by this, or do you suspect that it's a higher number than that?
Well, that was at the time. In 2005, the area that we knew had C8 or PFOA in the drinking water were these communities around the DuPont Parkersburg plant, known as the Washington Works in Wood County. There were communities on the Ohio side of the river and the West Virginia side. Those communities totaled around 70,000 people. That was back in 2005. Since that time, this chemical has been now picked up in drinking water in various communities across the country. In New Jersey, in upstate New York was one of the more recent findings, and in Vermont and in other areas all across the country. Because it wasn't until around 2013 that the US EPA even required public water supplies to begin sampling for the chemical. Even though it's still not technically what somebody would call a regulated chemical, EPA has, beginning in 2013, asked public water supplies to start sampling for it as a unregulated contaminant. So these water supplies are collecting data and finding PFOA in their water. Communities are finding out about this, yet there's still no formal guidance from the EPA or from the state as to what to do about it. And in the state of New York, where this happened in the town of Hoosick Falls recently, the state of New York came out and immediately declared the chemical hazardous under their own state law, declared the area where the contamination was found a Superfund cleanup site, immediately ordered blood testing and then further investigation. And I think you're going to see a lot more urgent response to this now that it's being found and people are understanding what this chemical can do at even the smallest concentrations in your drinking water over time.
And so should people in our area be concerned about this as well?
Well, the Washington Works DuPont plant is upriver, and for many decades discharged PFOA into the Ohio River in levels that probably peaked in the late 1990s. There was sampling done in the Ohio River for PFOA, and it was found as far down as near the water intakes for the city of Cincinnati and the Northern Kentucky water supply. Fortunately, I believe that the city of Cincinnati has a very effective water filtration system that's been in place for quite some time. Northern Kentucky, I believe, put in a filtration system in 2012. So I haven't seen any evidence that it has been found at any elevated level in the drinking water in either Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky. But there was some research recently published, actually through, I think, some collaboration with the University of Cincinnati and some other local institutions did some of the initial work. But they found elevated levels of this chemical in the blood among a group that was studied that used Northern Kentucky water. And again, they couldn't find evidence that it's in the water itself, but they found these
elevated. So they're not sure what the source was.
Correct. Okay. They're not sure what the source was. You know, the obvious source was looking upriver, but I've now asked the EPA and the state to look into why are these blood levels elevated. We haven't heard anything back yet.
Rob and Paul, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Attorney Robert Bellott and Dr. Paul Brooks, the manager of the C8 Health Project for Ohio and West Virginia.